Good morning. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, I have just two main points for you this morning. First, the law in this circuit is well settled. An agency may not issue a definitive interpretation of its regulations and then reverse field through a second definitive interpretation unless it follows the notice and comment process set out in the Administrative Procedure Act. Otherwise, as this court said in Paralyzed Veterans, the flip-flop obviously would undermine those APA provisions. It would also undermine the policies of the APA. Those policies include more informed decision-making by the agency, fairness to the regulated community, and enhancing judicial review of the final regulation. Now, most agencies abide by the law of this circuit. And as a result, it's rare for this court to see a case where the agency acted as though Paralyzed Veterans simply doesn't exist. But that's exactly what the Labor Department did here. In 2006, it issued a definitive interpretation of its regulations, announcing that the typical loan officer is an exempt employee. Then, in 2010, the Labor Department pulled the old surprise switcheroo. Out of the blue, it issued a second definitive interpretation, and this time it said the typical loan officer is not exempt. It even withdrew the 2006 interpretation. What changed between 2006 and 2010? Not the regulations, not the job duties of loan officers. What changed was the administration itself. This brings me to my second point. The district court applied the correct legal test here, the Paralyzed Veterans Doctrine. But the district court added a new element to that doctrine, something that we might call extreme reliance. The district court judged our reliance by the standards of the facts in Alaska Professional Hunters. This is where the district court went astray.
Do you agree that reliance is an element here? Or are you just objecting to the application of extreme reliance?
Your Honor, reliance has no place in the Administrative Procedure Act to begin with. This court has never found a definitive interpretation, a flip-flop, but then allowed it to stand based on a lack of reliance. That's never been a determining factor. What the court has done is to mention reliance as a way of testing whether an agency's informal mid-level interpretation became definitive because of reliance by the regulated community.
In your view, reliance then really is a way of describing authoritative or definitive interpretation.
Precisely.
Well, then what do you do with MetWest and American Railroad, where this court says that the test includes a requirement of reliance?
I respectfully would disagree with that, Your Honor. What the court
says
is
what I just said, or what the court said?
With your characterization of MetWest and Association of American Railroads, what the court says each time is we don't have a definitive interpretation to begin with. If we do, it doesn't say what the petitioner says it says. And if it said that, they didn't change it anyway. And by the way, we don't have reliance here.
So it's all that language in those two cases is dictum. I'm not saying that's wrong, but that's your point, right?
You could say it's an alternative holding. You could
say, if it's an alternative holding, you've got a problem.
It's best understood as a way of asking, did it become definitive through reliance by the regulated community, even if it wasn't official and definitive in its promulgation? Did the administrative common law aspect that Judge Randolph wrote about in Alaska turn this non-definitive document into something definitive anyway? Remember that in Alaska,
why don't you say it's dicta? You might be better off that way.
So stipulated, Your Honor. So stipulated.
So suppose an agency issues an interpretive rule on January 1st, and then on February 1st it issues a revised interpretive rule changing it, and there's no evidence that anybody did anything in response to it. They still have to go through notice and comment?
Yes, Your Honor. The policies and the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act have never made reliance by the petitioner a factor. As long as a litigant is before the court with standing to sue, the extent of reliance is really not germane. The point of notice and comment, as I said a moment ago, is better informed agency decisions, fairness to the regulated community.
Well, the only reason we're talking, I agree with you about the APA, but the only reason we're talking about reliance is that there's all this language in our cases about it. Alaska Hunters and everything else. And I understand your argument about Alaska Hunters. Maybe there is no requirement, but it can't, it, just because the, in other words, well, go ahead.
Yes. But look where we get if we take that language describing the facts in Alaska Hunters. If we turn that into a standard, look where we get. So the district court said here, unlike the plaintiffs in Alaska Professional Hunters, here the association does not allege that its members uprooted their families and moved to a new location. Well, that's true. We made no such allegation, but why would we? Uprooting a family and moving is only one way to rely on an agency interpretation. It's certainly not the only way. And here, where the interpretation is nationwide and not limited to a geographic area, why would we expect reliance to take the form of moving? So even if reliance has some place in the analysis, the way it's been approached by comparison to the facts of Alaska Professional Hunters makes no sense. And those facts don't even give us a workable yardstick. You can measure reliance in terms of the number of years. You can measure reliance in terms of how many people were affected, in terms of geographic scope, in terms of the dollars invested, and so on. If you compare our facts to Alaska Professional Hunters, our reliance here was much greater than what we had in Alaska Professional Hunters in terms of the number of people and in terms of the geographic scope. We're talking about some 600 guide pilots in Alaska versus over 100,000 loan officers all across America. If you compare the reliance here with the reliance in Alaska on the basis of dollars invested, our reliance was also much greater. There are many millions of dollars at stake in this case, far more than were involved in Alaska Professional Hunters. On the other hand, it's true, our reliance was shorter in terms of number of years, roughly 4 years versus roughly 30 years. But where does all that get us? At the end of the day, there's no way to know which one of those factors should be given more weight than another. There's no objective way to juggle and balance them. Those comparisons always are artificial. And that's what happened here. The district court got focused on that comparison and lost sight of the fact that our reliance was both substantial, justified, and also uncontested in the district court. Nobody said below that we didn't rely. What they said was we didn't rely as much as. Okay? So let's just review quickly the reliance that we have in this case. We asked the department to issue the 2006 interpretation. Why would we do that if not so our members could rely on it? First of all. Second, when the interpretation was issued, we did rely on it. Our members, some 2,000 lending institutions across the country, actually relied on that interpretation. We have in the record the affidavit of David Carroll, who's a vice president at Quicken Loans, which was sued by the interveners in this case for not paying overtime. And David Carroll testifies, when he saw the department's interpretation in 2006, he reviewed it, he compared it to the job descriptions for Quicken's loan officers, and he concluded that they were properly classified as exempt. That's reliance, pure and simple.
Well, the district court here, though, says that because of the Portal to Portal Act and the safe harbor that it creates, that your reliance wasn't really reliance.
Correct. And that's a curious argument, because if we didn't rely, the Portal to Portal Act gives us no defense at all. So it's a vicious circle to say that we couldn't have relied because we're protected by a defense. The essence of the defense is that we rely. The number of lawsuits filed against our members for failure to pay overtime after the department flip-flopped in 2010 shows that that reliance is very real and very much an issue. And in footnote 14 of our brief, you'll see citations to some cases where the defendants have interposed reliance on the 2006 interpretation as a defense, invoking the Portal to Portal Act. But that proves our point, not the government's. In short, the Labor Department clearly violated the law of this circuit. The government's brief is focused mainly on trying to change that law, but that's not what we're here for this morning. Under this court's settled law, the 2010 interpretation must be vacated for lack of notice and comment. And I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Anthony Steinmeier from the Department of Justice. With me today is Douglas Letter, also from the Department of Justice.
Nice to see Mr. Letter back. It's been a while since I've seen you there, counsel.
And Adam Hansen, attorney for the interveners. Let me address first that reliance issue. There's a legal issue about whether reliance is a separate and independent requirement from a definitive interpretation, or whether it's just a factor used for to determine whether there's that definitive interpretation. I'll clear the air. There was a definitive interpretation here. So they would prevail if it's just the only reason you look to reliance to find out if there is a definitive interpretation, the 2006 interpretation.
Okay, can we quit and go home then, just ruling this?
Well, hear me out, Your Honor. That this court's dealt with that in three times, as Judge Tatel mentioned. One was in Met West.
That looks a lot like dicta, right?
I'm sorry?
That looks a lot like dicta. The court didn't need to get to that. That wasn't the change.
Well, let me just look at the opinion.
I know what the opinion says.
From my own benefit, at page 509, the court said the first problem with Met West's argument is that OSHA never interpreted the legislative regulation to allow use of reusable blood to holders in all situations. Yeah. That's at 509. And then they just discuss that for a good bit. But then on page 510, they say, even if OSHA had interpreted the regulation to permit use of blood holders in all circumstances, this case would still not fit within the framework of Alaska professional hunters. And it goes, a fundamental rationale of Alaska professional hunters was the affected party's substantial and justifiable reliance on the well-established agency interpretation. That looks to us as two independent requirements.
What about our decision in Environmental Integrity Project?
Okay,
which is the only case.
That's Centels.
It's the only case where we've ever actually invalidated.
I don't think.
It doesn't mention reliance at all.
Right. That would mean reliance was not an issue there, so it's not something the court faced in that case. Now, as I say,
I don't understand that answer.
Nobody raised reliance.
I see.
As I recall, now I might be mistaken. Yeah. The other is we say in our brief, the court there did rely on the Alaska professional hunters' rationale. Our answer is it didn't need to, because by saying that the reinterpretation was in effect an amendment to something that changed a legislative regulation, that brings it within the Supreme Court doctrine and Guernsey, as well as this court's law before paralyzed veterans. So there's another way of reading environmental integrity that does not take it out of line with the Supreme Court precedents. With that, this is the first time the government's ever fully briefed the reasons why paralyzed veterans is out of step with the APA and also out of step with Supreme Court law.
But you agree we were bound by that
but an in-bank court would not be bound.
Oh, this isn't an in-bank court.
No.
Right.
Still, it's rather, there. I'd like to just present the argument. First, the APA says interpretive rules are exempt from notice and comment. Paralyzed Veterans says not all of them. Some of them do require notice and comment. That's a plain conflict. The second would be, once you reach that step, then you get to the second step of Vermont Yankee. Vermont Yankee says courts are not free to impose additional requirements other than those imposed by the APA. Paralyzed Veterans imposes a requirement that's not only one that the APA is silent on, it expressly exempts notice and comment. And the same thing with Fox. Fox says The APA makes no distinction between initial agency rules and rules that amend or undo those. That's exactly the distinction that paralyzed veterans make. So we think it's certainly worthwhile.
You can use your time any way you want, but you agree we're bound by it.
Not
so
to go
you
that
want,
far, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
This court's statement regarding in-bank allows some loopholes there.
Oh, yeah, what are those? That's interesting. I'd like to know what they are. You mean we're not bound by our precedent? There's some exceptions?
I'm sorry, I missed the last.
There are some exceptions to being bound by our precedent?
Yes. Uh-huh. One is if there's an intervening
yes.
Supreme Court.
Correct.
Now, we don't.
And what is that here?
That would be Fox. Uh-huh. But we rely on a combination of Fox as reaffirming what had been before paralyzed veterans.
That's interesting. I guess I misread your brief. I thought you were conceding that we were bound by. At this panel was bound. I mean, I know the interveners argue that we can go where you want us to go, but did I misread your brief? I thought your brief said we're stuck with paralyzed veterans.
Perhaps I'm going a little bit beyond that. I'm not sure we did say it would be for an in-bank court. Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But
so maybe you should focus on, let's assume for a minute that reliance is a requirement, that you're right. Maybe you could make your argument as to why this isn't sufficient reliance in this case.
Okay. It was only in effect, basically, we think the district court got it right. This was the real exception here was the 2006 exception. Up until then, mortgage loan officers were not exempt under the administrative.
What about reliance since 2006, though?
There has been, but that's where
Bang. The court. Bingo, there has been.
But, well, first of all, there, except in the very narrow case that Judge Tatel issued, where 1 month later there's a change, the only reason an agency issues an interpretive rule is because it expects somebody to rely on it. And here, Mr. Seinberg.
Bingo.
But Bingo. That's not enough.
I don't see why you're not handing the case on the reliance. If you're right about reliance being an issue, why haven't you just handed that issue to the
Oh, it has to be. Not just any form of reliance, but we think that more in akin to Alaska professional hunters, and we're well below that standard here.
How are we below that standard?
Okay. First of all, it was, as I say, the exception to the uniform practice here was in line for 2006 to 2010, less than 4 years.
How much money could the entire bank mortgage banking industry spend on lender originators in 4 years?
I'm sorry, considerably more. I will concede that that's more than the Alaska hundreds of
right,
dollars.
Right, right. When you conceded that, why haven't you handed that issue, if it is an issue, to the petitioner?
I'm sorry, why are you saying, why doesn't
Aren't
that
Aren't you handing the issue to petitioners, if it's an issue?
Yeah.
If reliance is required, it seems to me you've just conceded reliance about three different ways.
Well. Again, there was.
He said it was more than the Alaska fit.
In the dollar amount, but here's the difference.
It's you got not, some other. You wanted to do it in euro amounts, it would still be in euro amounts. It would be more.
In fact, just as a district.
Slobovia Grochniks or whatever it was in.
Well, NetWest involved money in the sense of, too. What's different here.
What's a little money between relying friends? Is it?
Well, in Alaska professional hunters, it was the impact on the human beings. They said they've moved up there. They ran a business for 30 years. That was really extraordinary.
You don't think this money belonged to humans? Don't think this money belongs to humans? You think mortgage bankers are margins?
Well, the other thing is, in their complaint, mortgage bankers said they'll pass it on to consumers. That's something different than the Alaska.
They're humans, too.
Right, that's right. We fight. But still. In all the cases where this court has followed a paralyzed veteran, where reliance has been presented as an issue, it's looked for the kind of reliance that was present in Alaska professional hunters. And that was an extraordinarily great amount of it. And as Judge Brown mentioned, if you're looking at the harm between 2006 and 2010, that's where the Portal to Portal Act comes in. If, as seems logical, the mortgage bankers' members can say, we relied on that 2006 regulation, that's a defense. That doesn't cost them the money. Now, what about 2000 forward? Well, here, that's a point where what justifies that is labor construes their interpretation as prospective only. So they do have some notice. It does require that they go back and reinstitute the kind of accounting procedures that they had 4 years before, but it's not, I don't think we're talking about the millions there.
But you seem to be saying that if they, that somehow if they have a defense, there's no harm. They still get sued. They still have to defend those suits.
Yes, there is that litigation defense, but on the other hand, the argument the other way is how much do you want to impede agencies from being able to make their policy changes
quick time? It's subjecting them to notice and comment. Nobody says you couldn't make this change.
Right. Well,
it isn't even argued that they couldn't. The agency couldn't make the change. The objection is they didn't do it with notice and comment.
Well, but there, the line drawn in the APA is between.
Well, now you're back. Now you're back to challenging the regular paralyzed veterans.
I know.
We're bound by paralyzed veterans. So.
And if we agree with you, there wouldn't be any time limit, right? I mean, if the Department of Labor had this interpretation and that interpretation had been around for 30 years, your argument is they could change it without notice and comment.
Yes, because that's an attack on paralyzed veterans. Now, given paralyzed veterans, was the district court correct in finding an exception? And here, on that argument, we would say yes. And that part of it does go to Judge Posner faced this kind of issue. There are costs to notice and comment. They're burdensome. Sometimes agencies are deterred by the cost and the timeliness just not to issue interpretive regulations. For example, in one of the Seventh Circuit's paralyzed veterans cases, Hochter, Judge Posner said it would be no favor to the public to discourage the announcement of an agency's interpretations by burdening the interpretive process with cumbersome formalities. An agency does the public a favor if it announces the interpretation in advance of enforcement.
You're arguing as if this is an on-bank court. We can't go there.
You have the power to do that. The alternative is either do that or continue to out of step with the Supreme Court. And there is no answer to. You read the statute, and the line drawn in the statute is interpretive regulations don't require notice and comment. Paralyzed veterans does in some cases. The Supreme Court says you can't add those requirements. You do.
Maybe
so
you need to talk to the Supreme Court about that.
Well, I'm not sure you want us to do
change our law.
I'm not sure you want this to go to the Supreme Court, Your Honor.
I'm not supposed to give a rat's one way or the other, whether it goes to the Supreme Court, counsel.
I think
there's also our on-bank court. Mm-hmm.
And that's within the court's power. You can.
No, that's within. You can seek it if you wish. But
I'm sorry. I meant within.
What can we?
If you do that.
But can I just go back? I just want to be sure. Your brief. I want to make sure I understand your brief because that's the argument that's before us. And your brief did not argue, as far as I read it, that we could go, that we were free, we were not bound by paralyzed veterans, right?
That's right.
Okay. And that's the argument you presented to the court. Not, today you're saying something different, but the argument that we have is the argument in your brief. And your brief is different from the intervener's brief, which does argue we're free to go beyond to abandon paralyzed veterans, or they even suggest an iron's footnote. You didn't mention that, did you?
No, we didn't. No,
and so I suggested. So am I right that the absence of that suggests that the government is not really urging us in this case to do anything other than follow paralyzed veterans?
That's incorrect. But
that's incorrect or correct?
It's incorrect because we said you should consider this issue. If it's appropriate for en banc, Let's go in bank. And one other point, the intervener.
But you see, that's still, I want to make sure, we need to be very faithful to the arguments the government is making.
Well.
And would I be wrong in saying or in understanding your position that this three-judge panel of this court is, that you do not disagree with the proposition that this three-judge panel is bound by paralyzed veterans? Now, true, we could use an IRS footnote, which you haven't asked us to do. We could, I suppose, on our own unbank the case. We have that power. But or you could petition, if you lose, for unbank, and the full court could hear it. But I don't hear the government telling us in its brief anything other than we have to apply paralyzed veterans, right?
Let me make point that the issue is before the court because that's clearly in the intervener's court brief.
I'm asking about the government's position.
But the issue is before
your
the
position.
Court on
you're representing the United States government. Right. The government's position.
Right. Our position is paralyzed veterans is contrary to the APA and the Supreme Court, and this court has the power to correct it through an unbanked court.
All right. I give up. Okay.
Well.
Go ahead. We'll just follow your brief. We'll quote that. So, did you have any other thing you wanted to cover?
No, I think that covers it.
Has he used up his time? I stopped paying attention. Okay, thanks. All right. Thank you very much. Did counsel for petitioner have any time left? Okay.
But unless the court has questions, I'm prepared to waive rebuttal and submit on the papers.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Case is submitted.